What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Jope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Jope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550.
Gonna be that in an hour. Coming in my band, tie, shoes, and my necktie.
Welcome. Who you got in the play-in games? Bulldog. The under on the Lakers. Sneaky Joe had that yesterday. Before he left, he's like, by the way, bet the under on the Laker game. Very sneaky maneuver by Joe. On his way out the door. He had some stat about how the public was betting over, and you know that's why you something. So I just like
and that worked that, out. That worked best, out okay for you.
The best betting I've ever done has to be just other people telling me to do it. Whatever. I mean, just
yep.
I won on UConn under because Evan Abrams from the Action Network had a tweet about how the line was moving toward that. Like, okay. I just have for years thought. My own guess as to who will win these games. Once in a while, I'll do underdog pick'ems, or I did a same. Why I don't know a same game parlay in baseball the other day. Just I was ended up doing that and did not make any sense. I never
ones,
win those.
Was it one of those at the top of the page that was just like they made it for you? And then no, like, oh that looks good. No,
I've never lowered myself to that.
You built yourself. You built your own.
I think I've never lowered myself to that. Yeah. But yes, I built my own. And lost.
Yeah.
That seems to always happen. But when I get these little tips, okay. Last night I did a hockey parlay and lost. I had Montreal.
Me too.
Well, okay. I mean, you had better. We've had more wins than
that's
I had probably.
That's like almost every night for me.
Montreal, Washington, and then I put tonight's game, like the Islander game on there. Like, oh, well, I can maybe hedge. Didn't come. Patrick Kane ruined that.
That's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yep. We'll talk about the NHL. Paul will join us, locker clean out. The Flyers empty net stuff last night is really interesting. We've got two guests, both on the NFL draft, Davis Maddock and Chris Trapasso, who joins us weekly. I had the morning to myself mostly today. My wife went to her office, kids are in school, and I spent, I mean, several hours. I spent half of it on the draft.
All right. What did you learn?
I don't even remember. It's my head is spinning. I've officially reached the old paralysis by analysis phase. I think I'm even past that.
Yeah.
Like I read word for word Sigmund Bloom's pre-draft Bloom 100.
I saw that today. I spent some time with that today.
And he's got defensive player. It's a fantasy article.
Yeah.
And that's really more my interest anyway. Like I'm reading for fantasy too. I've got a dozen or so dynasty teams. I'm looking at rosters and draft picks and just like, all right, what are we going to do?
Same here.
Yeah. Well, that's right. And I've never been good at the reading comprehension. I get easily quickly to a point where I just am numb to it. Here is the question I want to ask you, and I want to ask Davis Maddock this, and maybe it works for Chris Trapasso, too. The only reason I say maybe is because I try not to ask him the same things every week. So I don't know if maybe we've already asked Chris Trapasso three times a question like this. To keep it simple, at least at the start, the Bills pick at 28. How many wide receivers, or other players, too, how many wide receivers work for you? You want to count the top three guys who will never be there at 28?
No,
I don't think you have to.
No, let's not do that, because that's not realistic. I think you should include Brian Thomas Jr. in it, just because you know, who knows.
I think you should too. There's a chance.
I don't know that I want to put him in my, like, even though he has been talked about mostly, you know, because of what we've seen in mock drafts, as a guy you'd have to move at least, you know, maybe as much as 10 or more picks up to get. I've really cooled on him as an idea.
Thomas?
Yeah. I don't know if it was some of what maybe Sigmund had in his piece or someone else. I don't know. I'm just not, this doesn't sound like a great idea to me.
Isn't Mitchell reading worse than Thomas right now?
The thing about Mitchell, did you see this today? I think this came from Tyler Dunn.
Okay, right.
He's type 1 diabetic, and some of his behavior could be traced to that. And this is the thing about the draft that is just amazing to me. We're almost a week away from it now. We've talked about this player as much as almost anyone in the draft, and had no idea that this was a thing.
But can't that be because, due respect to Tyler, I was texting with him today as well about some of this. Can't that be because it doesn't have to matter? Like, isn't that maybe already baked in, his health?
Well, if you aren't managing someone with that condition, it can dramatically affect their mood and their behavior and just everything. So I don't know. It's still a risk to me, maybe as much as ever, but I feel like that might explain a team. The Bills could look at that and go like, all right, well, we can handle that. We'll give the guy to make sure he takes his insulin when he should, and we'll keep him on, and fine. We're going to get this prospect that, you know, the biggest red flag on him is he doesn't try all the time, and he's, you know, moody and mercurial or whatever. I don't know. Like, maybe that can be, I don't want to say controlled, but you can do a better job of staying on top of that, maybe.
I feel like I'm being put into a washing machine with that one. Like, the spin, it happens every year. It doesn't always happen as late as this date, where you go, the draft just needs to freaking get here.
Right.
Like, it just needs to get here, because I am going crazy. This is what I mean. I'm going crazy with, but this, but this, but this, but this. I try to, at least to a point, maybe having a talk show gets in the way when we're sort of obligated to talk about these things at length all the time, but keep it kind of simple and lean on the numbers. And that's why I'm not with Mitchell or Thomas, because they both had almost pathetically low yards per route run stats for guys who probably will be picked in the first round. Like, that is super scary to me, that for one reason or another, and I know the points people make all the time, the great other talent on their teams, et cetera. Sneaky Joe was talking about, like, he retweeted or something, a series of passes that were way off that were intended to him. Like, I feel like I want to assume that always happens. There are always excuses for those guys. And so with there be, this is the question. This is the mm-hmm. point of the question. With there being as many, if you will, candidates for that pick, I don't want to ever, even at 28 and not like 10, I don't want to have to feel like grin and bear it, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, they need wide receivers badly. This is a year, everybody agrees, where you have many, 20 or more, interesting options, at least first two rounds, if I can spread it out to that. I don't want somebody that I don't love. I'm watching Love is Blind. I know you were big into Love is Blind. I'm watching that show. Yeah. And look, I mean, there's a lot of pressure to say yes, but... So, okay, two. I think you're saying you'd include both of those players.
Wait, which two?
Thomas?
No, I don't...
You don't want him if he's on the board of 28?
I don't think I do. I'm a little scared of him.
Okay.
803. So I would say Mitchell, McConkey, Worthy,
Franklin, PFF Sam today, Franklin.
I know, at 28, though. I mean, I don't know. Franklin, Coleman.
Five.
You got to circle all the way back to the beginning of this thing, like back to February for me.
That's Franklin for me, too.
And I might include Leggett here.
Six.
Although that 28, there'll be a lot. Oh, a lot. There would be some, I think. Like, whoa, he's a third-round guy. What are you doing picking him at 28? Those are the guys I would say I'm most interested in. And of the names there, and I know this is going to sound weird. Like, I've been thinking about the draft a lot today, too, and I did a decent amount of reading also on the draft. Don't ask me how much of it I retained. My head is also kind of spinning. I did remember this thing about diabetes. So I'm taking that as a win. I think Xavier Worthy might be my favorite idea.
Yeah, okay.
He doesn't fit exactly what the Bills have said they might be looking for. Like, they need a guy they don't have, body type wise, I think Bean has said, right? And that means size. But they also have not had that. They have not had elite melt your face off speed on this team really at all. The guys they had that had it, like Hardy, barely got used. And you know, Worthy, I'm going to trust, is a much better prospect as a, you know, all-around football player and receiver than Deontay Hardy. And so that idea, I'm coming around to that idea. Like, I think the just having someone that can scare defenses that much, I think could be really nice for the Bills. So that, I think, you know, it's still a week and a day out, but that's become my number one idea, I think, is Xavier Worthy. So he's definitely on the list.
Was that six? Was he one of the six, or are we adding him? I think he was one of
the
six.
No, he was one of the six. I said Mitchell, McConkey, Worthy, Coleman, Franklin, Leggett.
The thing about Brian Thomas is, Ed Tate, by contrast, Leggett. This doesn't have to matter to anyone, but if the Bills pick Brian Thomas Jr. at 28, they will get
lauded.
They will be lauded. They will get everybody's respect. Mel Kiper will give them an A because it's a simple matter of team need, you know, the consensus on the player's talent, and also what the mock drafts were all kind of saying about the guy. And so Thomas never goes later than that.
Right.
And so the Bills would get all the credit. That's what you want as a GM, isn't it? Number one, all the credit.
I don't know, maybe in the short term, I think you actually want the player that's going to really work out for you. And obviously, if you're picking him, then you think he will. But sure, it's nice to get, you know, credit for doing, you know, whether it's smart or just it falls to you, so you get to be smart. Like, I'm taking this player. His slide ends now. We recognize how good he is. We'll take him. Thank you. We'll take him at 28.
Yeah, you don't get any special credit for that.
No, because it's everybody ahead of you letting the guy go.
That's kind of Zach Benson, I think.
Yeah, sure.
That, like, the Sabres didn't get any special credit. Well, they also haven't had a good team, but for him, it's just sort of like obvious, right? Adam has even admitted that when we talked to him about drafting Benson and sitting at the table. Remember the Sabres all sitting at that table, like nobody was talking? Like, they're just sort of pretending to be thinking about it.
Right.
Because they knew.
I think it's pretty obvious who we're going to pick here. Yeah. Yeah, maybe Brian, you know, unless the Bills don't like him for whatever reason. I mean, I don't know what, you know, maybe it's some of the stuff you've been sour on him about or other stuff. And, you know, maybe if teams one after the other that need receivers are passing on a guy that's been thought of as in the middle of the first round and he's sliding, maybe the Bills just get in bed with everybody else and go, like, okay, fine, let him keep sliding. We know why he's sliding. We thought the same thing. Or something else, whatever. We had a concern, and that's not, you know, Bills DNA or something.
That's an interesting one. I would not expect that to happen. I'm not sure that's much to say. But you have these it's also because quarterback is so high profile, but who are the fallers, the supposed fallers that you remember? Aaron Rodgers was one. Levis last year, where it's quarterbacks, and maybe there has been a misread in the mock draft community, if you will, on the perception of the player. But that doesn't have to be all of it, because with quarterback, there are only so many teams that would be interested. And even the Bills could have had Will Levis last year as a higher ranked player than Kincaid, but they didn't need Will Levis, so so what? You know, not even necessarily the Bills, but the quarterbacks can really fall because a bunch of teams will not be interested. The receiver, I think, especially nowadays where there's just always exponentially every year more people in the mix predicting the draft, all the guys who are thought to be more connected and all the work that's in it, it would be shocking. There would have Tunsil is one, but he had, I was about to say it, I just thought of him. You have to have some sort of like a last minute hang up where, this guy has an injury we didn't know about, or, you know, a bong related
offense,
a BRO, a bong related offense, something like that. Where the world is like, oh, what's going to happen at the draft?
For kids who don't know and don't remember Laremy Tunsil, like the day of the first round of the draft, there was a video that surfaced of him smoking marijuana through a gas mask device, like a contraption he made in a gas mask bong.
Which if you are going to smoke, I mean, let's not discuss it.
I would think that's a probably pretty effective delivery system.
Well,
yes, I would think so. If that's what you were about to ask, I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound like such an expert.
I'm trying to change the subject, Robin. What else is in the news, Robin? So... A Brian Thomas Jr., if something comes out, then, yeah, all bets are off. Literally, because they would take him off the board. But otherwise, like, he's not falling out of the first round because too much information has been shared by now. Too many teams have, you know, traded information with Peter Schrager and Krugler, whatever. Like
Dane Brugler. Brugler. Is who you wanted there.
Well, so, I'm sorry. Dane, that's really bad. But, you know, right? So,
yeah.
I don't think that would happen. I don't know. This was like 5 minutes ago when this point came up.
Yeah. I was only saying if he were to fall that far, I think I would be scared to take him. I would think there's a reason. And I might suspect that if it's, you know, personality or something, like some intangible, something that comes out in an interview, that the Bills would be a team that would have noticed that.
Well, we'll see. To me, that's kind of taking Ken O'Brien or Tony Eason over Marino, right? Like, just sort of, we know better. But I don't know. It's pretty hypothetical. It's pretty specific.
Yeah.
Peter Schrager, I got his name right. 8 receivers in the first round of his mock draft. The Bills are on Mitchell as wide receiver 5. Then Worthy. No, Worthy might have been 5 to Dallas. And then, yes. And then Mitchell to the Bills at 28, wide receiver 6. And also the last 2 picks of the first round, McConkie to San Francisco and Jalen Polk to Kansas City. You did not name Jalen Polk on your you would be okay with it. The original point a million years ago was Brian Thomas – the Bills would get a lot of credit. They would get A's. Leggett, they would not. Because you're supposed to be able to get Leggett in the second round. Not that anyone knows.
Right.
But you're supposed to be able to, you know, trade down and do that. We all kind of talk like we know that would be possible. So maybe
it's kind of
6 is a high number.
Yeah, it's the opposite of Brian Thomas Jr. Like, you're going to get a lot. You know, not from all corners, but there would be, I think, yeah. Mel Kiper would go, boy, this is a player I have ranked in the 50s. Yeah, whatever. I don't know where he's got Leggett, but I'm just saying. Like, that seems to be the consensus, is that he's maybe not a first-round guy. So if you did that at 28, you probably would get the opposite of the credit that you're talking about you getting if you pick Thomas there.
I think that is the consensus. I think there are 5 receivers who most people think will go in the first round. It's the big 3, Thomas and Mitchell. After that, it's 50-50 at best. Even McConkie, Franklin... Mm-hmm. Of course, Polk. Of course, Leggett. And everybody else you can think of. Worthy maybe is the highest, actually, in that group. I think he's probably a little less than 50-50. If I did the thing from the Watkins draft.
Like more of a sure thing to go in the first round than not, you're saying? Or the opposite?
More people expecting him to not go in the first round. Okay. But I don't know if I'm right. You'd have to go. I'd have to do the thing I did, or someone would, the Watkins year. And just look up 10 or 50 mock drafts and write it all down, cultivate that data, and then see what it says. I think he is respectable as a first round pick idea. He ran 4.21. Like, enough said. He ran 4.21.
And what I read, I mean, down in the 20s, where if he's going in the first round, is probably where he's going, unless somebody just is so romanced by him being the fastest guy in combine history or whatever, that they go up and get him earlier than that. So none of these guys are perfect. Maybe the top three are. And then the other guys like, oh, well, there's this or there's that or this weakness or that or whatever. But I feel like Worthy, I feel part of the reason I'm sort of getting into him and feel like that would be my choice is that I very rarely see him just dismissed as, well, be careful. Don't just get seduced by the speed. That there's a decently well-rounded player there with maybe still more room for growth. Like, his route running is decent, his hands, he will do other things besides just stretch the field, but he will be an elite field stretcher for you. And I think the Bills could really benefit from that, not just from the times you get the ball in his hands, which, of course, that's optimal, but he should clear out a lot of stuff if he's that dangerous. Think about how we feel when the Bills got to play Tyreek Hill. You know, the Bills have just not had a guy like that. I mean, there's not very many. Brandon Beane even said, like, fine, go find me Tyreek Hill. Well, here he is. And he might just be sitting there. All you got to do is write his name on a card.
That's if that. You might not even have to write it anymore. Nobody writes it anymore.
To tell
just
him.
Say it. Yeah. Talk to the card. There's got to be a chip in the card.
Just type it in somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, just talk. Speak it into your
wrist.
The NFL
draft uses Snapchat to communicate.
No. Well,
no, that's probably not right.
Hockey probably does.
No, Snapchat's too current.
For hockey?
They use MySpace.
Yeah, maybe that's right. All right, well, here we go on the receivers. It's a week and a day. We also want to talk more about the Sabres. Reading Paul from Locker Cleanout, yesterday was Kevin Adams. Today it sounds like it might be Tage Thompson going in on accountability stuff with his teammates. Pretty strong. We'll talk to Paul later. And I know we know, they made a coach. They're making a coaching change here. There's a certain former Sabres coach that, you know, a lot of fans are sort of wondering, will he come back? That, of course, is Ted Sater. And we're, you know, having those conversations. Hopefully he's still, is Ted Sater still with us? I hope he's still with us for my making that crack.
I'd have to Google.
There are, I think, at least three former Sabres coaches who did come back. Bowman did. He was in the front office, and he went back behind the bench.
Okay.
Nolan.
Right.
Did. And.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think there's another one. I don't know. I had this yesterday because I was going to make a line about Granato.
Did Punch,
being fourth,
did,
unless
did,
he comes back.
Did Punch ever get back behind there after, like, Floyd Smith and Joe Crozier?
No.
Like, I don't think that happened.
No. We'll figure that out next right away. So that's not – we don't want that to linger.
Mm.
I especially don't because it's my potential gaffe. 803-0550 for your calls. Sabres, the draft, and more. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
For me, accountability is consequences and, you know, actions. If you're not doing right things on the ice, there needs repercussions, whether it's being benched or in the press box. If you're not playing winning hockey, and I think consistency is the other thing. I think at times you could see that we were a great team, and other times we're too casual. That's something that has got to be instilled in us with the consistency. It's us in here in the room holding each other accountable if there's someone not playing the way they need to, and obviously needs to come from up top too. And that's something I don't think we had enough of this year.
Boom. Tage Thompson, who I don't think I've ever heard say too much interesting, but he's like most guys in that way, at least, I don't know, maybe my bar is just way too high. But, you know, he recently was talking about noise, and I'm like, come on. Man, is this fair? Could we have all maybe appreciated hearing that in, like, November or December when the season
that
was
right there. Yeah,
like
that. That would have been leadership.
It's not the same thing. Just to hear him say it publicly, let me put it better. To hear him say it publicly doesn't mean he wouldn't ever have said it privately, right?
That's right.
Most of what is said within the team doesn't get out. So who knows? Which makes it even, not that it wasn't already not too difficult, but to really know what kind of buttons the Sabres need pushed is like almost impossible without being in the room. Because who knows what their leadership dynamics really are, unless you actually play for the Sabres or maybe are in a small handful of other people. So I don't know if Thompson was like complaining all year. He doesn't even have to be right. But he could be somebody who was thinking all year, like, we need that from up top. We didn't get it. Like, accountability stuff. And what if he went public? Did he have the clout? Did he have the stripes? Drew Doughty got his coach fired after a game against the Sabres by saying, we don't play right. And a coach with a lot of winning history was out after that. I don't know. Maybe I don't want to just take every time I hear Tage Thompson's voice as an opportunity to be critical, because I'm glad to hear this today. Mm-hmm. And really, it tells you something, at least one important player's opinion about what the Sabres are missing.
Yeah, it might just be that the players are all just sort of falling in line behind the lead set by their GM yesterday, who was, you know, pretty direct and critical, I think, like going over it, like thinking about how some of what Adam said, how he presented it, and how, like, what kind of light it shines on Granato. I mean, you could listen back to some of that. I did yesterday after our show and think, like, man, Granato, if Granato's paying attention to this, like, this can't feel good. I mean, the stuff about pressure, it being nonsense. I mean, Granato must have given that speech 50 times, 100 times after games the last 2 years. And Adams yesterday is just like, it's nonsense. Wow. Okay.
He sounds like me.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder, you know, Thompson, what I think of when I hear Thompson talking that way, and even Alex Tuch and Dahlin, like, most guys are maybe not as direct as Thompson was there about the press box and playing the right way, but it's a theme. That's why I said what I said about everybody sort of falling in line behind the boss, and that's Kevin Adams. They might just all be a bunch of, like, nobody wants to be the bad guy. Nobody wants to be the guy, and maybe that includes the coach too. Just didn't have it in him to be a hard ass. And not everybody is cut out to do that. I mean, there's a reason why teammates, I'm about to mention Michael Jordan, there's a reason why, like, some of the most legendary leaders in the sport had guys who hated being around them because they were demanding. Like, I don't think I need Michael Jordan to walk in the door, but, you know, all the hand-holding, and we all love it here, and we're proud to be Sabres, and we want guys who want to be here and all that. They just, it's good that they are tight, but they might just be too close to be able to tell one another what, like, sometimes the hardest person to talk to is the person you are that the closest to. You can be maybe more direct with someone who you're a little less emotionally involved with. Man, I might be overstating emotional involvement. These guys are teammates, but it just sounds to me like somebody needed to smack some people around, and nobody seemed to want to do it.
The Sabres have had the problem, just generally at least, where their best players have been pretty young or really young through this interminable phase of rebuilding. Like, it's all very nice that Oposo played a leadership role, but he wasn't a good enough player. And this was obvious before they re-signed him, I thought. Mm-hmm. I think you agreed. Like, that's the problem you have now, is he has to play, like, he has to produce, or else what can he say? You know?
Right.
I mean, you make your captain a guy that's on the fourth line. They put him up on higher lines, better lines, maybe because they felt like they had to, because he's the captain of the team. They're asking leadership from him, and he can't score. It was just a bad decision they made, I thought. Eichel, right? Dahlin, so young. Mm-hmm. He's older now. Credibility. It's right back to that word. You know, leadership is within that. You know, I don't know if I want a coach that is most of all famous for, like, throwing chairs or anything. I don't think I want to overdo it. But Adams had the right tone yesterday. Like, we're not young anymore. This is, like, for real now. We're here.
Yeah.
We lost it. We missed again. We're here. Now it has to be more serious.
Well, obviously, we're all eager to see where Adams comes out on this coaching hire in the first place. And then, given what today has sounded like so far, there's still another day of this, right? The locker cleanout originally, you know,
I don't want to try to read into that schedule.
I know originally Don Granato was supposed to be talking to the media on Friday, but that
maybe he will.
That note said Wednesday, Thursday, locker cleanout player availability. So maybe there's still more of this to come. But nonetheless, who's he going to hire, and just how ready are these guys to be held accountable? Like, I'm on guard somewhat right now. I guess the point I'm trying to make here, if there really is a singular point I'm trying to make here, is that I'm not sold 100% that these players entirely believe that. I think they might just be saying what is going to get them the least resistance, which is just, well, the GM said this, so I'm going to say this, and then we can go fishing. You know, I don't know. I mean, I know how that sounds, and I don't mean to be judging these, you know, the character of these men so harshly. All I'm doing is it's easy in that kind of setting to just sort of fall in line. Someone has set a tone. He's the man in charge. He has said this. I'm not going to tell you that he was wrong today. I'm not picking that fight. I'm going to ride in his wake, because he caught a pretty big line through the water yesterday, Adams, I thought.
Sam Reinhart has 57 goals, by the way. Or should I say had, like finished the season with 57 goals?
Yeah.
Wow, did you ever think that?
No, I thought he was a really nice player. I did not, you know, think he would be.
57?
He's second in the league in goal scoring, right behind Matthews, I
guess. Yeah. Last night was pretty interesting. The Flyers drama, you and I talked about this earlier. We both happened to be watching the end of the Washington-Philadelphia game. You had the Washington broadcast. I had Philadelphia. I don't know. Why did you pick one? Do you have any reason for picking one and not the other?
I was interested in I guess I like Joe Beninati. I guess I would settle on that. And I don't really love the Philly guy.
I didn't know which one I was picking. It was the first one on the – like, you probably have the same screen.
Yeah.
The horizontally lined up.
Like, right. That's ESPN Plus.
ESPN Plus.
I shouldn't have said that about Beninati. I don't really like him or loathe him. He's just okay. I don't enjoy Jim Jackson, the Flyer guy. And I watch enough hockey I'll take the Washington one.
I was on Philly, and there was a face-off. It was 1-1. There was a face-off coming up in the Flyers' end, and he said, the update for Montreal is in the lead 4-3, and there are 7 seconds left, and there's a face-off in their end. And then, as I remember it, the Flyers game went on for a little bit, and there was another stoppage, and he said, you won't believe it, but Detroit scored, which meant the Flyers were out. There were 3 seconds to go. You probably know all this, but Detroit forcing overtime in their game, and that was it for Philadelphia. More time went by, and Philadelphia pulled its goalie anyway, even though the game was meaningless, and Washington scored and made the playoffs. We talked about this yesterday as a possibility.
And as a result, Pittsburgh was eliminated.
Right. And Detroit.
Well, right.
So John Tortorella, the Flyers coach, naturally is asked, it was like the seventh question. Because the first questions were about, are you proud of your team on your season? Like, just, oh my God. Finally, somebody gets to basically, why'd you pull the goalie? You know, what was behind that? And he said, I was always gonna, but he didn't know that the Red Wings had tied the game and were going to overtime, which I am choosing to believe, because that'd be a lot to lie about. Like, if you're saying you didn't know when you did because somebody told you that, and you just missed it and pulled the goalie because you didn't have it figured out, like, that would be a lot. So I'm choosing to believe Tortorella that he didn't know. But the next important question is, well, how could you not have known?
Right. everything depended on that situation.
For everything. The Red Wing game could have been on the Jumbotron. Like, that's all. They had to have that game. Montreal had to win in regulation for the Flyers game to have meant anything. So I'm watching the game in Grand Island, and I know the Flyers are out. Then they pull the goalie and lose. And, like, how did that happen? Even, okay, you didn't know, but how did you not know? How did the fans all know before Tortorella? Because anybody on their phone would have, that's the only thing you care about if you're a Flyers fan in that moment is, there's 3 minutes left in my game.
Right.
What's Montreal needs to win. And when they don't, incredible, that play. Like, just, oh, my God, Montreal, two nights in a row giving up that goal. Yikes. But how does everybody know before the head coach of the Flyers? And, you know, he could have pulled his goalie anyway, but it would have been weird.
Yeah, it really would have been weird. Like, if he just wanted to win the game, you're tied 1-1 there. I mean, just ride it out and get to overtime. If you're really worried about the 2 points, like, I don't get it. I also don't think him misrepresenting or lying about whether he knew or not would be
worth it.
You would find out. Yeah, somebody, because somebody would have been responsible for relaying that information, and there's just too many people that might have found out for him to take the chance to say, I really didn't know. So I believe he really didn't know. But it's weird that he really didn't know.
In his press conference, by the way, his wording was going to overtime. But Detroit scoring that goal is, honestly, that's the equivalent. There's 3 seconds to go in the game. That game is going to overtime once that goal is scored. So same thing. I don't know, just like there's still a question that was unanswered by the Flyers.
Do you know what happened earlier in the game?
No, I know he was asked about a disallowed goal, and he wouldn't answer that question. I don't know if it's because who asked it or what, but he just passed on that.
It was a very tough play that the refs just flat out blew. I mean, I think they reached the correct conclusion by leaving the goal disallowed, but there was a first period, maybe one of the first good scoring chances of the game at all. Well, it really wasn't a great score. It was a wrist shot from the left circle up high on the Washington goalie Lindgren. And so you can, you know, I'm sort of gesturing like both gloves up near the shoulder, trying to control the puck, but it bounced off him and went straight up in the air above him. He didn't see it, but he stayed in a position like he was freezing the puck, but you could tell he didn't know. Like I've watched goaltending close enough because of my kid. Like the minute that's all happening and in real time, I'm like, he doesn't have that, and the referee in the corner.
Oh, no.
Blows the whistle, the puck is coming down, at some point before it lands, he blows the whistle, the puck deflects, I think off the goalie, off the goalie, into the net. And the whistle blew well before it went in the net.
Oh, no.
And so, yeah, here we got this game with an enormous stake, right? It turns out to be a 1-1 game until they pull the goalie. There's a goal that got pulled down with huge playoff implications, but it wasn't a continuous action. It bounced around after it came down, and because the whistle blew, like, sorry, no goal.
Okay, my turn. Quickly, did you see the icing against the Canadiens?
No.
That set up the faceoff?
No.
It's hilarious.
Oh.
Two Red Wing defensemen, as the puck is between the circles, traveling back toward their goal line for a potential icing, basically just stopped skating. And they called it icing
they
anyway.
Gave it wow. Wow, that's tough.
It's middle of the second period, it's always waved off.
Right.
That play would have been waved off. End of the game,
wow,
they don't wave it off.
I did not know
two
about
guys,
that.
Not even one. Yeah, wow. Two guys. Wow. Could have gotten to that puck, I think. Looked that way to me.
Yeah.
The Flyers broadcast showed that. Before the Flyers game was over, they showed the goal and they showed the icing.
Sounds like I was watching the wrong broadcast.
Like, oh my God. Now, a lot happened. Davis Maddock on the draft coming up in just over 15 minutes. Chris Trapasso and Paul Hamilton still to come. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR. Welcome back, everybody. Davis Maddock, Chris Trapasso, Paul Hamilton. All ahead on this Bat Appreciation Day.
What's this now?
Bat Appreciation Day. You know what it should be?
The bat, like the flying creature?
Yes. Were you going to say animal and then you weren't sure?
Yeah.
Or what is a bat? A rodent? What is a bat?
Yeah, that's what I was.
You had that in your head there?
Yeah.
Knew it. There should be bat appreciation night, not day, because bats aren't going to be out to even hear you.
Or unless they're trapped in your attic flying around while you're trying to do a radio show during a pandemic.
That did happen
to you. That did happen to me, yeah.
But they won't even hear you say, hey, bat, I appreciate you, because it's... Yeah. Daylight.
It's too bad. Too bad for the bat.
It is too bad. By the way, I want to correct something said earlier on today's show. You're thinking, oh, it could be like 17 things. But I don't believe Bulldog is actually into Love is Blind. But I am.
No, I'm definitely not.
I'm doing it. I got to the end of season one.
Watched it. I don't know.
It's just the worst. I like it.
Yeah, well,
it's the worst.
I get that. I get that.
I don't know. You know what it is, too? Like, last night I watched two or even two and a half episodes of the end of the season.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking to myself, like, I'm getting hungry. And in the weight loss program, I'm going to bed earlier because otherwise I'd be up eating a bag of chips or something or
a can of mushrooms. Pizza,
a can of, hypothetically, a can of mushrooms. And so I'm watching the show and I'm just like, oh, you know, a beer or something, chips. But I didn't. I had one slice of chicken breast, like deli.
Oh, I see. All right.
That counts as a snack. So I did that. I admit. Oh, I might have had a pickle, too.
Oh, now you've, spear. Now
a spear.
Now you've done it.
What is a spear? Like a third?
It's a quarter, maybe.
Of a pickle?
Yeah.
I did have a pickle. Mm. But I did watch the end of season one.
Yeah.
I got a ways to go. I don't know.
You don't know what's wrong
really
with you?
I really don't need to watch any more of this show.
But you're gonna.
I might. Yeah, I might.
Oh, you definitely are. I can tell already.
It's a new season. You're like, ugh. Do I have the strength for Love is Blind season two?
Last time we talked about stuff we're watching or have watched, I said how like I got this low threshold for the bike versus the living room. Like on the bike, I'm like whatever, this isn't that good, but I need. And I mentioned this show Justified, which I'm now two episodes from finishing the sixth and final season. So I've got like two more episodes and it's over. And I am finding myself actually thinking about I'm going to miss these people. Mm. Even though I, like, last, like, 2 weeks ago, I said, like, it's not a show I would tell you to watch. It's not great, but it's good enough. I think I really like it. But I might just be because I'm captive. Like, because I chose to do it, and now I'm going to see it through to the end, and now I'm thinking, like, they're going to be gone. I'm not thinking about I might watch something better. It's just like, oh, I'm going to miss Raylan Givens.
Raylan Givens.
U.S. Deputy Marshal Raylan Givens to you, Bubba. Yeah, I don't know.
Similarly, I'm just suffering through these weddings, the end of season one of Love is Blind, and I'm falling asleep, and one of them implodes, and then there's a short pause, and it's like, Lauren and Cameron. I'm like, oh my God, there's another one that we haven't even gotten to yet. But, just like you just now, but... I was choked up by the end. I was choked up by the end. Right. Lauren and Cameron had me. Davis Maddock after sports NFL draft here on WGR.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.